What up? Welcome to the motherfucking Soulcast. Alright. What up, y'all? It's been a minute. I'm back up in the motherfucking studio. My studio was shut down for a while because we were getting all this housework done. I thought I'd still be able to get work done with all the noise and confusion and floors being ripped up. But apparently, things like that take way more time than than I thought. So, hence why I'm not good at that shit. So yeah, it's been a minute since I dropped the podcast. Before my house went into total disarray, I came up with the idea of doing another listener question podcast that I put out through folks who subscribe through Patreon. Much love to the 150 or so people who subscribe through Patreon. That still is just a tiny, tiny portion of the people who listen to this show. So if you listen, you want to support it, you want to help it grow, you want to aid this quest, sign up, become a monthly subscriber through Patreon, patreon.com/SOLEONE. I'm still pissed at this platform for what happened with IGD, but I'm continuing to use it until something better pops up. I know I have homies who are working on something better that I would have liked to switch over to 9 months ago, but it just, these things take time. So I took a bunch of listener questions, got a lot of really good questions, some pretty hard questions, and just want to send a huge, huge thank you to everyone who subscribes through Patreon, to everybody who took the time to ask these questions. And you know, I like seeing this kind of critical engagement. It's inspiring to me. So, let's just start. First question comes in from NatSec Dan. What are your thoughts on communization theory? Now, I love that, you know, one of the hardest questions is first. It's like, okay, what are my thoughts on communization theory? I guess I'm just going to say my thoughts. First of all, I would say that I'm deeply, highly influenced by the Invisible Committee and Tikkun. I see them as like the heirs to, you know, what the Situationists were trying to do. And although the Situationists were Marxists, like their platform, what they were pushing was something very anarchist that has a very heavy influence on modern anti-authoritarian movements. So when I trace that line from, you know, the Situationists and the Autonomous Movement, which is another movement I really respect a lot, and I look at communization theory, you know, I'm pretty much all on board with it. You know, some people would disagree with this sentiment that I'm about to say, but in my opinion, my anarchist vision completely syncs up with the communization theory approach. And for a lot of reasons, I would also say with the approach of the autonomous movements in Greece and elsewhere. I've read Endnotes, which is like the journal for communization theory. And quite honestly, I found it to be dense and I just didn't enjoy reading it. If I'm going to read something, I want to read something that like jumps off the page at me. And that's why I'm drawn to the writings of Crimethink. That's why I'm drawn to the writings of Tikkun and the Invisible Committee. You know, for me, like, good revolutionary writing is poetic. It's not academic. And that's what I do not like about the sort of Endnotes journal. I just don't believe, like, I love reading that stuff. I love, like, trying to figure it out, but I'm just at a point in my life where it's like, I just want people to say it plain, but say it beautifully. That said, communization theory, the sort of merging of like insurrectionary anarchist politics with like the ideas of like building commune, building infrastructure, you know, becoming a material force, not engaging in petty activism, you know, blocking the flows, you know, seizing territory, expanding territory, defending territory. You know, again, like these, I don't feel the need really to like align myself any more with that than I already am. Like to me, like that's my anarchist vision. That's, you know, when I think about like people like Scott Crow, when I hear him talk and I hear the people in France talk about what they're doing, you know, about like the need to go beyond ideology, the need to meet people where they are. I mean, there's so many interesting things that people can learn, specifically from the Invisible Committee and Tikkun. And that's about as deep as I have gone into the communization theory. But again, like when we, it had a big impact on my writing, but also had a big impact on my thoughts on democracies and assemblies. That book, To Our Friends, we did a reading group for it here. I fucking, I mean, that was one of my favorite activist things I've done, was to just sit in a, sit around with people and discuss this book. Many people know I've been to Tarnac in France, and Tarnac is the sort of community that is built up around the ideas, or that people move there inspired by the ideas of Tikkun and the Invisible Committee answering what was called the call. And like when you're reading the stuff in the books, it all sounds great, but then when you go there and you see what's going on, you see what's happening at Lazad, you see what Tarnac is like and how people have developed a new way of life that's both like a removal from the metropolitan gentrification madness of cities, but it's still an engagement. Like it's still this hub. You know, they talk about Tarnac like it's a Silicon Valley of radical thought, and actually they don't, but they play with that idea a little. And I think there's something to that. I think, you know, there's something to the idea that like the power lies in infrastructure. The state's power lies in its bridges, its roads, its all these things. And if we build our own infrastructure, like not just like info shops, you know, things that are like actually needed by everyone. And again, that's like, that's the big takeaway that I got from like the Hurricane Katrina stuff, that from Scott Crow, and you know, projects based in mutual aid. And again, it's like we play with the language. We, you know, we can like call ourselves autonomous. We can call ourselves Apolistas. We can call ourselves, say, oh, I believe in communization theory. But for me, I think just folding it all into anarchism, because the people who I know who are anarchists essentially believe all these things, so I don't need to call it something else. And I was listening to an interview with the Black Rose Federation lately on, I think it was IGD or Rev Left Radio, I'm not quite sure. But they were talking about how like anarchists in the United States are always talking about building infrastructure, but when we do it, we're not necessarily building it like with intentionality, so that it's actually useful. Like we're not building childcare, we're not building clinics, we're not, for the most part. And I thought that was really interesting. And they were saying how like it's never been proven really that building infrastructure in itself is going to be liberatory. Like the only situation where I see like just straight up building infrastructure as an end in itself as being liberatory is to be assisting other movements. For instance, like when shit was going down in Standing Rock, there was large contingents from places like Four Winds here in the United States, which is like a Native American community place, and then Woodbine, which is like a local ecology center, and both of those places were providing material support for Standing Rock, as many others were. But the only way I see these things being really like truly liberatory is if like the state collapses and society collapses. So these little hubs, these people will be doing better than everyone else. So, but again, the idea that there's like some silver bullet hidden in like some obscure ideology, I just don't believe that. I just don't believe that. I think it's up to people to figure these things out on their own. That said, and again, this isn't necessarily a critique of communization theory. This is just what comes to my mind. I still, like, in my actions, like, I'm very interested moving forward about infrastructure. You know, that's why, like, the main activist stuff I've been working on has been the Channel Zero stuff. Because infrastructure is key. Look at It's Going Down. Look at Crime Think. Look at Submedia. Look at how building this infrastructure opens up new possibilities. Like, I absolutely believe that. I absolutely believe that. Another thing I like about, from what I learned about communization theory, is just this idea of revolution, not as like this fixed point on the horizon where like we can all like throw our hands in the air, but that revolution is a process, and that revolution is a line we trace in the present through our actions. Other things I love about what I've seen through Tarnak and Invisible Committee stuff is just this, like, and again, I find it present in Crime Think writing, just this like poetic and beautiful and romantic approach to life. The idea that like our form of life is I don't want to say sacred, but it's, you know, the world seeks to destroy it, you know, and we deserve to live beautiful, unalienated, poetic lives. You know, everyone should live that way. And that's why when I went to Tarnak, I was just like, this is the most inspiring thing I've seen. You know, herb spirals, permaculture gardens, giant medicinal gardens, like fields of time. Like, it was something, it was amazing, you know, and it was also very humble and very subtle. And I look forward to, you know, over the next couple of years, hopefully getting to spend more time there and learn more. And I know that there's like, yeah. So I would also say it's just a very different context in France as it is in the United States, or in Europe. Europe is, just has a very different institutional, not institutional, but just memory of radical struggle. The United States, like, our memory doesn't last very long. So my thoughts on communization theory are, everyone should read To Our Friends. And, I guess like the thing that I'm a little like skeptical of is on the internet is like everyone is like so quick to like throw adjectives on their name. Everybody is so quick to like, oh, I'm this, I'm this, I'm this. And as if identifying as a thing creates a path to liberation. Like, I could say I'm an anarcho-communist. I could say I'm a fucking closeted nihilist. I could say that, you know, I'm an insurrectionary. I could, you know, if someone were to come in my yard, they'd think I'm a green anarchist. And what I always go back to people like Scott Crow, you know, these things, like, you don't have to be one thing or the other thing. Like, you can, human beings are complex. Like, I can be insurrectionary. I can be green. I can be a great lover of Tycoon and Invisible Committee, but at the same time, you know, I'm rolling with the anarchists. You know, sometimes you might even catch me reading a Marxist. You know what I mean? Fuck it. Whoever's got good ideas, that's who I want to be reading. But like, how we identify doesn't create a path towards liberation. It doesn't, like, in finding like the hot new thing, it's not a path to liberation. One question from Abdul Razak. One question. I was reading Chesky's thoughts on Alias, and he mentioned when he was around 14, he visited the Anacon studio and was inspired. Do you remember him coming to visit and any additional memories? So just to backtrack a little bit, this person is referencing my old comrade Alias, who I helped start Anacon Records with many, many years ago when we moved from Maine to the Bay together. And he recently, you know, died very young and tragically. But well, there's another question about that later on, so I'll answer that more in depth, talk more about that later. Do I remember this? Yeah, I remember this. I remember it was like Chesky and Icon the Mike King and his brother David, and they were, you know, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, when you're 22, 21 years old, living in an apartment, like somebody who's 18 seems like real young to you at the time. So yeah, I remember when Chesky and those dudes came up, we recorded at least one song. And I just remember, you know, Chesky as just somebody who loved hip hop and was really talented. And we didn't, you know, and then we just reconnected years later. I mean, I remember what I can say about this particular studio is this was a warehouse loft in Oakland that we had moved into, that some friends were living in, and it was in the same building as like Living Legends, the Mystic Journeyman, where they used to have their warehouse. So it was kind of like a place loaded with history. It was cool to live there. And so we were living in Fruitvale and 59th and Seminary in Oakland. You know, there was like, it was Alias and his wife, DJ Mayonnaise and his wife at the time, and me, and all living in this big ass warehouse. We had a little office and a studio. I think my rent was $150 a month. And I'll bet you nowadays, if you were to live down there, it's probably $150 for a fucking coffee. Who knows? Who knows if gentrification made it that far? So yeah, that's that. Not a question exactly, but I want to hear Mama Swift on the Soulcast. You ever listened to her work? No, I have not, but I look forward to checking it out. Question from Abdul Razak. What are your thoughts of age 18 being the age when someone becomes an adult versus the historical notion that once you hit puberty, you become an adult? How would that fit into the anarchist utopia? I don't know how I feel about that question. I don't feel like I really have a good answer to it because I haven't never really thought about that. I guess I would say that I still think 18 is like, I mean, for what? Like, are we talking about sex? Are we talking about voting? Are we talking about military service? Are we talking about being a cop, taking out a home loan? Like, what are we talking about there? I don't know. I've never thought about it, but I guess I would say, you know, everyone deserves a role in the decision-making process. So if we're talking about like where people are living and how people are living, then I don't know. I think if people were educated, then they could make educated decisions. But the idea that like a six-year-old would want to like paint the sidewalks with gum and candy, like that kind of shit would need to get addressed. So I don't know. I'd have to ask as someone smarter than me. But yeah, I would say in general, you know, those sorts of things would probably work out differently. I mean, all right, Benjamin Gammon. How did the song Civil War on No Rising Up, No Settling Down end up happening? You, Chesky, and Sean are some of my favorite musicians. I'm curious how you guys ended up doing a song together. Well, I don't know. You know, I was on a tour with Chesky and Bluebird I don't even know, maybe 2009 at this point. And they were playing Andrew Jackson Jihad and Pat the Bunny, and I just loved both of those bands. So I just got on Twitter and started tweeting at Andrew Jackson Jihad. And then when they came to Denver, I played a show with them and became friends with them. And then Sean, the singer in that band, was always like, well, whatever you want, if you ever want to do some shit, you know, that could be really fun. Like, let's do some shit. And I was like, fuck yeah, let's do some shit. So when it came down to record the song, I was like, oh, I got to get Chesky on this. So, yeah, and again, that song, Civil War, was inspired by this book, Introduction to Civil War, by the Invisible Committee. So, you know, in reference to the questions back, but what do I think about communization theory? I think that shit has influenced my work a lot. I just choose to identify as an anarchist. But yeah, that was a great song. I mean, I've done other shit with Sean. I feel like we've collaborated at least twice, and me and Chesky made a million songs together at this point. What else? Okay. Corge Finnerty. How come Love Thy Enemy never made it to Let Them Eat Sand? I love that song. Well, two reasons. The first reason was because I've been making these songs and releasing them every month through Patreon along with other demos, and when I presented people the opportunity to rate their songs, like which ones they like the most versus the ones they like the least, that song ended up on a lot of people's least favorite list. And so I really reflected on what is it about that song, and I realized that, like, it's just kind of hokey. It didn't quite fit the mood of the album. Like, the album is, you know, it's got a lot going on. It's, but I feel like musically it moves. And whereas, like, Love Thy Enemy doesn't move. But it's also, like, more liberal bashing. And I also just felt like I see enough of that. I didn't really feel like I needed to contribute to the liberal bashing because I've said it before, you know, I just didn't want to be having that conversation about this album, like whether or not it's okay to punch a Nazi. It's just not, I don't know. Again, I feel like that argument is so played out that at the moment is what I really wanted to say because I was just so fucking annoyed. But then after a while, I was like, you know what? This doesn't fit on the album. So I think I am putting out like a kind of political mixtape of interventions. I'll probably, if I can get to it in the next week, I'll probably just drop it. It'll be called, I think it'll just be called Interventions. So it'll have that on there. Okay. Dominic. I'm very interested in your thoughts on what it takes to build a resilient, sustainable, autonomous community on a small scale. How could a few people with some resources build such a thing? Is a permaculture homestead a reasonable model? Okay, there's a couple more parts to that question, but I just want to stay on topic. What does it take to build a resilient, sustainable, autonomous community on a small scale? Again, I've never done this before. So I'm not really so sure that I'm, you know, the best person to ask. I tend to not function well in close-knit groups of people in each other's shit all the time. So we tend to live on our own, or in our own way. I could see that changing, but so that's just me personally. But I can certainly share my thoughts, theoretically, about what it would take. I think in general, you have to like know what you're doing, why you're doing it, and like enjoy the actual labor that you're doing. You know, I've been farming this property in my yard for, you know, 10 years now, and I've come to realize that more than eating the vegetables, more than anything else, I just love the work of, like, you know, digging shit up in the ground and all that stuff. So if you're into that, then do it. If you don't think it sounds fun to do that shit, then maybe it's not for you, you know? Can a few people with some resources build such a thing? Fuck yeah. you know, you can buy a house or land really fucking inexpensively in a lot of places. And I feel like the future is going to be more about experiments like this. Like, I was just looking at a report the other day that says, you know, a huge portion of America's creative output now is coming from rural areas. And that's because people are fleeing the cities and are wanting a different kind of life. And so I feel like, you know, the challenges of living remotely are even less than they used to be because, you know, millennial hipster culture is pretty omnipresent. So, you know, how could a few people with some resources build such a thing? Again, I think it's the same thing. Like, the people, they have to be people you like. They have to be people you want to be stranded on a desert island with. And, you know, I don't know how to do it. Me and my wife are just in the process now of, like, moving to Maine and approaching a more rural, homesteady kind of life. I would suggest, you know, figuring it out what you want to do with this land. You know, if all you want to do is grow food and, you know, write poetry, then yeah, I can fucking tell you how to do that. But is a permaculture homestead a reasonable model? I think so. I mean, I think that, like, you know, I don't know, when people talk about building, you know, these little eco villages, these little permaculture eco villages are all over the world. Look up eco village online and you can see various examples of how people have made these. And what would the biggest challenges be? I think the biggest challenges are whatever the local limitation is of your climate, like the limitations here, the limiting factors, as we call them, are strange weather patterns. You know, 80 degrees in February, 30 degrees in March, snow in June, snow in September. I mean, that will fuck up your fruit trees. So to mitigate that, people build things in hoop houses. What's it like at sea level? What's it like where you live? I would really, really encourage people to look at climate batteries, greenhouses. You can build them really cheap, but it's a way that you can use the heat and coolness of the earth to regulate the temperature in a greenhouse. And by doing so, in, you know, in places where it's really cold, you can have a Mediterranean food garden year round. You know, what are the biggest challenges? Money is always the biggest challenge. So, you know, if you get a couple friends together who can go in on some shit, I mean, you can buy cheap ass land for $100,000, and if you've never applied for a loan of that sort, I think you'd be surprised at how little money you have to actually make to qualify to buy property. So I think the biggest challenge really would be figuring out how you, like, scale into it, how you go from, like, working your job towards living off the land. And so that's, like, I'm thinking about this stuff a lot right now because it's something I'm trying to do. And that there's so many ways you can go with it, but in the end, it depends on, like, what kind of person are you? What do you enjoy? It's like, I'm a creative person, so I don't want to just be, like, carrying potatoes around for 6 months out of the year. So I'm going to be looking more into doing food forest kind of stuff just because I'm ADD. But yeah, I mean, just what are my thoughts on what it takes to build a resilient, sustainable, autonomous community on a small scale? I say just do it. Go in with your friends, get some land, or buy an old farmhouse, and then just start building shit and learning. I think the only way to do it is to do it. The only way to learn about it is to do it. So, you know, observation is key. You know, you just learn. You know, right now my sister is kind of doing that. She's, like, phasing out of her old job as a veterinarian and moving into more being a farmer. And it just, like, gradually happens.
See, I would just say research eco villages. I know there's like a bunch of shit in Virginia. It's funny, I've been talking to Margaret Killjoy a bit, and I know that she lives on some kind of intentional land project, and so maybe I'll talk to her about what that's like. Sorry, I don't have a better answer, but I've learned that it's better to just say I don't know than to ramble. And you can say I don't know and still ramble. So these are the little things you learn when you're 40. CK12, share your thoughts on the passing of Alias. I mean, it's really a crazy thing to think about. My first thoughts are, fuck, you know, he has a 6-month-old daughter and I think a 4.5-year-old daughter, and he's, you know, been with his wife since they were in high school. Like, I was at their wedding in high school in Maine. And you know, to think that 20 years later, I'd be flying home for his funeral when he, you know, dies of a heart attack at age 42. I never thought that would happen. I mean, talk about, you know, personally a paradigm shift and a, you know, a lightning bolt going through your world. You know, Alias was an incredibly, incredibly kind and loyal and talented artist. I don't think I would be at all where I am today without our collaborations. I mean, I feel like his music in many ways helped to make me famous. You know, we came up together. We moved from Maine to Oakland and started this record company and lived together for many years. And I'm sure, like, living with me was difficult because I was really like a slob and a maniac back in the day. You know, and so just over the years, we definitely had our differences. We had our differences over the direction of Anticon. We, you know, we had various little, like, things that seem petty when your friend is dead. But, like, real differences over the years. And so the last time I saw him actually was at my dad's funeral. And, you know, we hadn't really talked for a while, but, you know, it really meant a lot to me that he came. You know, and we hugged and we're like, oh, we'll work it out, you know. And then a couple of years later, his wife got cancer. And then a few years later, you know, she survived. But then a few years later, he's dead. And we never got a chance to squash our beef. I never got my chance to squash my beef. And when we were in Maine, I was actually in Maine looking at farmhouses in Falmouth, just driving around, when I got a call from Pedestrian who was like, yo, dude, Alias just died. And I was like, what the fuck? I'm 10 minutes from his house. Like, I've maybe spent a month in Maine for the whole time that I've been gone from the Bay. That's for 20 years. I never go home. I never went back to Maine. And to just be there when that happened, it was on my way to my son's first birthday. It was fucking intense. And it's into his friends that are like the closest to him, his homies in Maine, you know, artists he continued to work with. I can only imagine what people are going through. And my main thinking about it now is just like, you know, what can be done by Alias's friends and, you know, comrades in over the years, what can be done to sustain the safety of his children. Like, what can be done to support them and support his family and his wife Jen. And again, it's like, you know, I can't run around and act like, oh, we were best friends when he died, because we weren't. And that's, you know, that's real shit. But it's also, it doesn't fucking matter, because he was a beautiful person, a beautiful artist, and gone way too soon. Yeah, rest in peace, Alias, man. All right. Every now and David Allison, every now and then people ask about possible collaborations with the old school Anacom folks. But do you think y'all could still make compatible music together? If so, could you list a few who you wouldn't mind working with it again? Or have styles, direction, etc. drifted apart too much? Is the door to that possibility completely closed? I obviously would love to hear it. Thank you for letting us ask you questions. I know it's personal stuff. R.I.P. Alias. Yeah, I'm fucking down to work with any of those motherfuckers, actually. You know, No Stoms beats. Always love No Stoms beats. Always love Jim Jesus beats. Gel. I mean, literally all those motherfuckers. So, yeah, I could see myself, you know, hanging out with Gel for a week somewhere in a cabin and making an album. I think that would be fun. You know, I don't know if it will happen. Right now I'm working on a bunch of shit, and but yeah, I'm open to the idea of working with them. I'm open to it. I just released the Pedestrian album. That's coming out on vinyl soon. Yeah, I'm totally open to it. The door's not closed. Also, if you could just maybe share what you've been thinking about lately.
Okay.
Well, I've been thinking about a lot of stuff lately. I suppose on the sappier tip, I've been thinking about, you know, the value of friendships. As many people know, we're getting ready to move to the East Coast to be closer to family and to hopefully raise our kid on a farm and live that way, to kind of take a step out of what this feels like in the city, or what cities feel like in general and what modernity is. And so, you know, I'm thinking about that, but it's bittersweet for me because I've got some really good friends here in Denver, comrades who I've, you know, really struggled with in a lot of different ways, whether it's Skyrider, who lives out here, who I've been rolling with for fucking 12 years at this point, or, you know, comrades from organizing, you know, people who are friends in real life. Like, I'm really going to miss that. And it's hard for me to, like, walk away from this yard that I've put so much work into, although I know I'm going to be, you know, doing much more. It's like, this is like my first real garden and shit, so I'm kind of sad about that. But, I don't know. I've just been thinking about the same old shit, really. Thinking about, how to live better. That's all I think about. How to live better, how to eat better, how to be smarter, how to free up more time to read. You know, what else am I thinking about? Thinking about, yeah, the same shit, the same questions I'm always grappling with. Like, what matters anymore? Like, what's a meaningful intervention? What's, you know, shit like that. I'm trying to think, what else have I been thinking about? I'm thinking about perennial vegetables a lot lately. I'm amazed by perennial vegetables, like fucking garlic chives. You know, put a couple bushes of those near your kitchen door, like, forget about it. Alright. I've always wanted to be a part of an Corey Hoffman. I've always wanted to be part of an anarchist group, or more recently, been interested in getting into permaculture, but I've had trouble finding these things close to me. What would you recommend? Well, again, as someone who's getting ready to move, and I'm going to have to make these contacts in a new city, I would look around to see what's going on. You just never know what's going on. You know, if there's nothing popping, if throw up a reading group. Get some friends together to start up a local reading group where you just read a book that you're interested in. You know, go to protests. You know, make an obnoxious "hole here than thou" ultra leftist banner, and see who likes it, and whoever likes it, make friends with them. You know, there's so many ways of letting off little smoke signals to find out who's down, and that's the way I do it. I just go out when shit's popping. I just make jokes and meet people that way. And as far as getting into local permaculture groups, it's the same thing. I mean, chances are a lot of these groups, gardening groups on Facebook. I know that there's like a number of like permaculture design courses you can take online. You know, I highly recommend it. I would say if nothing else, just do, I mean, you can also do the same thing. If there isn't that in your city, have a reading group for Gaia's Garden. Do a reading group for Backyard Lot, Paradise Lots, and see who shows up. You know, you never know who's out there until you set something in motion and see who shows up. But I think I'm at this stage where I think reading groups are a great way for people to meet up and sharpen their politics and their ideas, whether it's for permaculture or anarchism or fucking business or speech or whatever. So I would just go online, look for a Facebook group. And if you want to pop me a message, let me know where you're at. Maybe I know someone out there, but I doubt it. Tyler Prodinger, do you plan on working with the Skyrider Band on a new album in the near future? Those albums are some of my all-time favorites. Fuck yeah, thank you. I'm glad to hear that. You know, love that music. Love those guys. I just got off the phone with the drummer from Skyrider Band, John. I mean, they're such great people. Probably not. Maybe way down the line, we'll all like reunite for like a, you know, one last fucking tour. But you know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of those guys have just kind of moved on in their own directions, and we stopped doing the project because even at its height, it was just too much. It was too much overhead, too expensive, too many people, and we just couldn't afford to do it. And I don't see that changing. If someone out there wants to, you know, fund the next Soul in the Skyrider Band album, you know, you got to hit me up. I mean, we could talk about it, but it was such a big project that it was tough to maintain. But we're all still cool, and you know, whatever. Thomas Hoffman, do you plan on touring Europe and specifically Sweden in the near future? Thanks for reminding me. I was supposed to send a bunch of PR stuff to my booking agent in Europe, Tito, about getting out there in late fall for a little solo run. If so, definitely be coming to Switzerland. Not sure if it's going to happen. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, I'd rather just tour Europe. I'm so sick of playing shitty fucking shows in the United States. I just don't give a fuck. I would rather be fucking hey, doing anything than that shit. Fuck that shit. So yeah, Europe, fucking let's go. All Europe from now on. Okay, two questions, topics. Building a garden and abandoning a garden in the urban USA. Something about the idea of the West and free open space in the toxic American consciousness, especially now in the age of the Instagram image consumption, tech bro seances, etc. You know, we did like a guerrilla gardening project here in Maine here in Denver a while ago. And when I think about how it played out, You know, I'm not so sure that it was like a meaningful intervention at all. Like, yeah, we did it, but that's about all I can say. We planted it in front of some projects that were in the process of being torn down. And even if they had stuck around, you know, or if like, it basically like, what I don't like about if these projects aren't done properly, like with local neighborhood buy-in or something, you end up just creating things that are become engines of gentrification. And so I'm like, I don't know. But if we're just talking about from like a spectacular, like fuck it sort of thing, like I've been thinking a lot about chokecherries, which are a local plant out here. And they're just monsters. They fucking break through the cement and just fuck up trees. And I was thinking about how cool it would be to use chokecherries as a sort of anti-gentrification tool, like, you know, Jerusalem artichokes and just shitty fucking plants that just fuck shit up. You know, I love the idea of that. And yeah, I mean, it'd be great if we could get all the food we needed from where we lived in our communities. But it's like, I don't want to be like some white savior who is like, oh, we're going to plant you a bunch of fresh vegetables that you have to tend to and, you know, all that kind of bullshit. Like, that doesn't lead to revolution, put it that way. But, you know, I've seen really dope squatted gardens in like places like Detroit. And so I think it really, really just matters how you do it. You know, especially like I would love to plant a food forest in my neighborhood. But it's like, am I just increasing the property value for all the surrounding buildings so that eventually it's like, oh, it's cheaper to air. I can make more money Airbnb-ing my house out so that people can go hang out in the food forest. Like that's the kind of world we're living in now. Pav, as you know, and as far as like, one thing I will say about the West, something that I thought was interesting that a Native American friend, Brenda, had said to me as I was getting ready to move. She was like, you know, what's with all you fucking white people just moving around all the time? What is it with, you know, about the settler mentality? It's always looking for the next frontier. And I was like, fuck, yep. So I don't know. I don't know about that shit. Definitely some shit to think about. I look at it like the transcendentalists or the romantic poets, you know, like just going out and seeking life. But I mean, the problem is, unless it was done right, if you built a garden and abandoned it, no one would know what it is. It would be overclaimed by weeds. And so, yeah, I don't know. But if you want to say fuck some yuppies and clone some choke cherries, yeah. All right. Another question. Jonah Mosian. What happened to all my questions? I posted here about the idea of abolishing enforced schooling, free speech platforming, violent protest, etc. So I respond to my friend Jonah. I haven't deleted anything. I'm recording tomorrow, so feel free to repost. So then Jonah, a.k.a. The Mole, awesome producer, musician, psyched to have Jonah as part of the Patreon subscription. I've made a couple of music with him. I mean, I've been talking to this dude for fucking almost 20 years now. So anyway, here's his question. Same with Pav, also the last person asking questions is someone I probably met him 10 times. Cool dude doing cool labor shit in Chicago. Anyway, Jonah. Maybe it was flagged because I suggested it might be better to assassinate Nazis than punch them, or because I wrote an essay worth of questions. Basically, I was criticizing/questioning common contemporary anarchist practices that seemed short-sighted and counterproductive, like petty violence and defacement, suppressing, censoring of fascists, and lack of debate, platforming, essentially emotionally based reaction, rather than long-term planning and strategic actions. I don't want to get into like the long debate about whether or not it's okay to be punching a Nazi. And I feel like the question that Jonah is getting at here is like, what's the long game here? What's the path to victory? And I think that's what a lot of people are asking themselves right now. I think, you know, again, to people who've been like involved on the ground, who've been organizing, who do organize, you know, you try organizing for 5 years, 10 years, and you start to see the limitations of people's imagination, of like the energy in the streets, the comfort level that a lot of people get with just not being dedicated enough. So when it comes down to, you know, why haven't we, you know, created this ISO style movement capable of, you know, did I say ISO? No, I did not mean to say ISO. I meant IWW. But yeah, so I don't think it's counterproductive to punch Nazis like any day of the fucking week. It's actually been proven to be an effective answer, an effective way to put an end to that kind of organizing, to that ability to hold public space. And I think that it's like actually critical, and one of the most important things that people can be doing right now is anti-fascist work. So, you know, so I don't want to like shit on what other people are doing right now, because I'm not doing anything much better than that. That said, I mean, it's theoretical. Like, we can have this discussion because, you know, they haven't like launched their fucking ethno state. They haven't like, they're laughed at in our society and like shunned. And part of that is because they're being so violently, quote unquote, violently opposed everywhere they go. I don't think they need to be debated at all. I think the way people have handled them is a perfectly reasonable and sensible way to deal with people like that. That said, would I like to see more? Yeah, I mean, but people are really quick to ignore all the relief efforts, all the anarchist-led relief efforts that happened in the hurricanes from Houston to Puerto Rico to Florida. You know, people, there's not like some like, you know, across the board platform of like, oh, you have to do this. This is like what everybody's doing. This is how we're going to make the revolution. But like in different parts of the country, people are intervening in different ways. But all that said, when I look around the terrain, I share the sense of, wow, we are not rising to this occasion, put it that way. But when I think of, when I say we, I'm not talking about anarchists, I'm talking about everyone, because anarchists are actually doing a lot of the heavy lifting these days, and it would be great if the quote unquote resistance and these other, like the DSA and these other groups, would get their heads out of the sand and start organizing in the streets and focusing on building the sort of infrastructure that we need to have a really revolutionary movement, because that's what the situation calls for. All right. Moving along. Okay, mentioning that debates and platforms can now take place via podcast internet, thereby not providing spaces in which fascist violence can occur, that the rise of the alt-right was a direct result of people feeling voiceless, and that it would be easy to intellectually shoot holes in fascist arguments. Again, we're talking about ideology here, and I don't think you can debate ideology. You know, it's like, if you've ever really tried debating someone who watches Fox News, it's like yelling at a wall. Like, you say one thing and they're like, yeah, but what, you know, same thing with the alt-right. It's like everything leads to the Jewish conspiracy. And again, and as someone who's been on lines, you know, after Trump was elected and like at the Milo thing, and I've like yelled, I've you know, I've pulled fucking white supremacists off people and, you know, been in the middle of these scuffles, and I can say, like, talking to those people just fucking sucks. You know, talking to those people fucking sucks. You want to go talk to those people, Jonah? Go fucking talk to them. Pointed out the hypocrisy of non-vegan leftists and wonder whether vegans should be more vocal about it. Yeah, I mean, again, like, I choose my battles. And, you know, I'm more interested about, like, class and ecological destruction in general. Although veganism may be what got me kind of the first radical thing I did. But, yeah, sure. But everyone's a hypocrite. You know, you can be a vegan with totally vegan made shoes, eating a vegan health bar, but all that shit comes from China, where people are being treated like shit. So it's just, you can't win under capitalism. What else? Let me see what else. The idea that mandatory public schooling should be abolished. I don't, again, in an anarchist society, nothing would be mandated. And I mean, I've been thinking a lot about school lately anyway, because my wife and I just had this kid, and like I didn't get anything out of school. So I don't place any value in the sort of education you can get in a school. The idea that the current climate around school shootings and student protests could be approached by in a more tactical and effective way than what I've seen amongst anarchist spokespeople, which has basically been to say that they support the student protests, but not gun control, which is in effect just turning a cold shoulder to the kids that are scared and forced into these prisons that damage them for life, and that we could be trying to guide and offer them an actual solution. And I think the movie And Then I Go is a very important look at how damaging school can be to our society and how this system is directly responsible for the shootings themselves. I'd love to see that film. As far as like the official anarchist line, I hear a multiplicity of voices, but again, I do agree that is kind of what a lot of people are saying, is like they support the student protests, but, not the calls for gun control. And like me personally, like I just stay the fuck out of that debate. I know like we're supposed to take directions from people who are the most affected by a situation, but if I don't agree with something, I'm not just going to blindly support it. I don't care who it is. And I just don't think that solves the problem. I mean, that's not going to solve the problem. People can go ahead and fucking ban whatever the fuck they want, but it doesn't solve the problem. But again, like I, after these last few round of school shootings, you know, I do. I'm hearing what you're saying about people being tone deaf and like the fear that people are feeling in schools. That's fucking real, you know. And if they want to ban some assault clip or some kind of gun, you know, to be honest, I don't really fucking care. But you're not going to see me out there advocating for it. You're not going to see me out there proposing that as a solution, because I don't believe that is the solution. I mean, it could be part of it, maybe. Who knows? You know, go for it. You know, they're going to get something passed. And I agree that we should be looking more deeper into what is causing these school shootings. It's been a subject that I've been really interested in. You know, I was, even though I don't agree with everything John Zerzan says, I liked his takes on it. And my interview with Franco Bifo is one of the best interviews I've done. That's mostly about this subject. And again, it's, you know, this last batch of questions are, these are big questions and these are tough questions. And in our movements, I think it's really important that we ask ourselves these tough questions. Like, you know, is militancy always the best answer? Is, you know, what can we, and this is what Scott Crow is always saying. It's like, we need to stop always just reacting to things and we need to start doing things. We need to build the things we want. We can't just say what we're against all the time. We have to show what we're for. And I think that's important. And with this anti-fascist moment we're in, I mean, there's actually a lot of work that goes into like researching these Nazis, finding out who they are, and through tireless work of a lot of people, like these. You know, it was only 6 months ago when neo-Nazis could march around with torches, chanting blood and soil, and without even wearing Klan hoods. And now all those people who have been identified have gotten fired from their jobs and are in a lot of shit. And, you know, when we're on the other side of a battle, or when it seems like the battle is won, it's good to look back and be like, okay, what was this effective? Was this not? And I, you know, I kind of get into this a bit with other, you know, people in my family who are just like straight up, you know, New England liberals and, you know, just aren't down with blocking up and beating the shit out of a fucking Nazi. And what I say is, like, no one's asking you to. No one is asking you to go out and punch a Nazi. There are people who are going to do that. And if all you want to do is go out there and hold a sign and tell people that you think it's bad and then go home, like, that's fine. Like, the more the merrier. Everybody should get involved on whatever level feels comfortable. But, like, I'm not going to tell you not to carry your sign. You know, I'm not going to tell you not to go vote. I'm not going to tell you not to go advocate for gun control. I might tell you I don't agree with those things, but I'm not going to tell you not to do it because I believe in the diversity of tactics, which most anarchists do. And so to my family members, I'm like, you know, I'm like, do what feels right to you, but don't compare what these genocidal, alienated maniacs are talking about. Don't compare that with what people on the left, what anti-fascists are doing. Like, it's just not the same shit. And again, like, say the hardest questions came in at the end, and you know, I don't mean to sound like I'm like, you know, totally against what the mole was asking in these last questions, because these are all questions I ask myself, because, you know, ruthless fucking criticism of everything existing, man. So yeah, it's been about a month since I've done a podcast. Feels good to be back in my seat. Got a new, it's in my studio. We just got new floors put in, getting all this work done on our house before we move, which makes perfect sense. And yeah, be recording a bunch of shit over the next month. And if you want to support this project, go down to patreon.com/SOLEONE and you know, subscribe, rate, and holla at your boy.